Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
Reading from the Australian magazine called Cosmos, The Science of Everything, the issue 83 to Time, it's a recent edition, it's a quarterly edition, by far a superior, in my view, publication to... New Scientist, and I've spoken with the people and they're all okay about me podcasting the whole bloody lot of it. Interesting, here they have the words astroarchaeology and quantum biology. Now, quantum biology, I understand, astroarchaeology is a little bit hard to get my head around. Now, letter from the lead scientist. Now, what I like about this is that if you read New Scientist, it's sort of like it's sort of idea as candy to get you to read lines and lines of stuff about dark matter. And dark matter, the only clue we've got to its existence is its ghost-like gravitational pull. Everything else is up for grabs. So, Alan Duffy, lead scientist. I like that idea. I wonder if I know him. He seems rather young. I love him called a lead scientist. There exists a fundamental new form of matter in our universe, outweighing everything we can see five times over. Well, I wouldn't say a new form of matter. Its gravity holds the Milky Way together, and yet we cannot see it, as it neither shines nor absorbs light. Not only invisible, it is a ghost passing through solid matter as if it were empty space, such as the 10 trillion particles that fly through your body every day, and less than a handful might collide with a single atom. I think what he actually means is neutrinos, but really poor. After saying it's great, the writing is great, the science is bam. The search for dark matter involves international teams of engineers and scientists building detectors with tons of noble gases or ultra-pure crystals to record the rare impact of collisions. The detectors must be shielded against otherwise blinding radiation from space, so they are built far underground. I'm involved with one such facility called Saber. We built inside a gold mine in Stanwell, Victoria. Because of the radioactive traces contained in all steel manufactured since the atmospheric nuclear tests were conducted in mid-last century, even the metal used to build the dark matter detectors can blind them. To escape this problem, we've teamed search for pre-World War II steel from sunken battleships protected from the fallout by watery depths. The hunt for dark matter has been going on patiently for years, and yet, beyond one tantalizing but still conventional controversial claim detection, nothing has been found. The challenging nature of dark matter means that the world of science is exploring other possible search strategies. One of these, described in this issue, uses naturally occurring salt crystals formed over a billion years ago. Perhaps researchers suspect they contain tiny bullet tracks made by collisions eons ago. The biggest scientific mystery around, it seems, may be solved with a pinch of salt. When hunting for the ghosts, it pays to keep an open mind. So let's just summarise here. Because of the fallout, getting into all the metal, you have to get to pre-World War II ships. Isn't that amazing? There's heaps and more than enough shipwrecks in Japan. It was sort of just an orgy of ships being sunk in the northern waters of Australia. That's beautifully written, though. It's the blinding light of radioactive stuff and the fact that we're looking at these tracks. So that's what they mean by astroarchaeology. Yeah. Evidence Triumphs Ideology, from the editor Andrew Masterton. Now, it's quite interesting to see his head. There's a little circular picture. Welcome to the latest quarterly edition of Cosmos, and what we hope is an entertaining, informatively deep dive into the realms of science and technology. The recent federal election in Australia demonstrated one thing very clearly. As the heated campaigns rolled out, many of the issues became a hot-button topic centred on the question that had more or less to do with evidence than ideology. The country's energy generation mix, now and in the future, was a constant topic. Arguments flared around electric cars, high-speed rail, mining approvals, drilling in the bite, impacts of the Great Barrier Reef, and above all, very loudly, climate change. Ultimately, These are all issues which, once the fiery rhetoric diminishes, turns on the results arising from a carefully conducted, randomised, double-blind, peer-reviewed research. Isn't that just a go? That's where you go. Perhaps more than any other election in history, it had science, Australian election, it had science and technology at its heart. In this, at least, an Australian electorate aligns with the growing global concerns. Exactly what the future of humanity holds is uncertainty. But it's clear that it will be determined by physics, chemistry and engineering. Hopes and prayers are no longer relevant, if indeed they ever were. In this issue, our writers bring you a wide range of science stories. Some look to the past, while others look to the future, but all rest securely on findings arising from painstaking research. I love this. This is the dogma. It's got to be carefully conducted, randomised, double-blind, peer-reviewed research. Isn't that beautiful? Because in the end, the main difference between scientists and politicians, scientists arrive at conclusions based on evidence, politicians all too often do the reverse, arrive at evidence. Oh, isn't that beautiful? He is, what a master. I think you're arriving at evidence based on conclusions. Isn't that beautiful? Now, digest. Now, this is an interesting thing. Biology. Why great spark when you microwave them? It's must-watch viewing for science curious. Cut a grape in half with the skin left on, pop it in the microwave, then wait a few seconds, and sparks will fly in a bright puff of light or plasma to appear. In popular theory, is the hot spot creating the spark occurs because the skin conducts electrons back and forth. But not so, suggest Canadian researchers in the Journal of PANAS. Quote, the plasma is created due to amplifications of the electromagnetic field between the grapes. Says Pablo Bonci, Concordia University, Montreal. The cause by the interaction of trapped microwaves. Skin or no skin, having two grapes or two halves is the key. Isn't that amazing? The dawn of the zombie peaks. I sort of write this. It's so much better written. Isn't Andrew Masterton beautiful? That is conclusions based on evidence. Evidence based on conclusions. It's the dawn of the zombie peaks. Neuroscientists have succeeded in restoring partial function to brains of decapitated pigs hours after they were killed. In the paper published in the journal Nature, researchers led by Zovnia Valeshia and Yale School of Medicine in the US report, quote, the restoration of maintenance of microcirculation and molecular and uniform cellular function of intact pig's brain up to 4 hours after death. The results are at once extraordinary and, legal experts, biochemists say, deeply concerning. In effect, Berger and colleagues have created the world's first zombie pigs. There's no ideal exception. We've got to really tweak the definition of life again, don't we? If they do so, first, they do so. But the which is a fairly fascinating system of brains, which had earlier been slaughtered before the production of morals. The researchers said that promotes tissue recovery from anoxia. A lack of oxygen reduces vascular injury, prevents fluid buildup, and metabolically supports the energy requirements of the brain. Monitoring 32 brains undergoing the procedure, Vanessa's team noted that 4 hour mark post-mortem cell death slowed down, followed by restoration of vascular dilatory, glial, inflammatory responses, spontaneous synaptic activity, and active cerebral mechanisms. So, does that mean, I don't know when the, so 4 hours of this, in other words, investors and their colleagues are quick to underline the point. The results showed a neurophysiological recovery, not a neurological one. Revive activity was limited in scope and location, and there was no indication of global brain interactivity, the sort of integrated activity that might indicate return to full function and perhaps even consciousness. Now, of course, unfortunately, guys, because I'm trying to do brain stuff, It's dark matter, ideology, microwaves, and pigs. Cthulhu lives, or sort of. This is a really interesting. I love the Octavian explosion. Paleontologists reveal the multi-tentacled creature of the deep. A creature with a more than passing resemblance to Cthulhu, a mythical creature created by the author H.P. Lovecraft in the 1920s. One of this actually existed, paleontologists have revealed, although just 3 centuries wide, it was hardly a danger to shipping and dormants. Isn't that beautiful? Beautiful English, isn't it? Isn't there something good going on with the English of this medicine? Not, of course, that there were any human man-made structures around with Celestinus Jolly prowled across the ocean for some 4 or 13 million years ago. I like how the information is there and the sentence is packed up so the information flows. It's not beautifully put. The creature is a very distant ancestor of sea cucumbers. Sea slugs is revealed in a paper published by the Proceedings of the Royal Society B. It was found fossilised in the UK county of Hereford. Researchers led by Imran Rahman from the University of Oxford have then spent months painstakingly grinding away and taking photographs at every stage, resulting in an accurate 3D computer reconstruction. I don't think you have to say computer reconstruction nowadays. The creature boasted a couple of dozen tubular tentacles, which it used, Rathman and colleagues suggested, to both move around the seafloor and quick and suck up prey. This is an interesting paleontology. New fossil human relative found in the Philippines. That sort of locks in the Ferenz one, the hobbit. And the interesting thing is I saw a hobbit skeleton in the Australian Museum, and you're looking at it and it's got huge feet indeed. Something with huge feet. A handful, that's why it's a hobbit. A handful of teeth and limestone crusted hand. That's all really bad. A handful of teeth. That's bad. Foot, leg, and bones dug out of the cave in the Philippines have been given their own branch on the human family tree. Oh, it's just really bad English. Ugh. The new species, Homo lorensis, is described in the Journal of Nature, is believed to have lived more than 50,000 years ago in Lauzon, the largest island in the Philippines. The discovery marks the second time that species from early humans have been found in the islands of Southeast Asia that are separated from both Asian and Australian continent shells by deep water straits. Diminutive Homo forensis, a little hobbit, discovered in 2004 on the Indonesian island of Flores, was the first. Although the hobbit, as it became known, is now accepted as a unique species, its seemingly bizarre mix of archaic and modern traits was met with initial skepticism. Okay. Homo lorensis is also a mix of old and new packaged in and what is probably a small body. Archaeologist Philip Piper, now at the Australian National University, made the first discovery in 2007 while sorting through bones dug in the animal-rich layer nearly 3 metres below the surface of Kalo Cave floor, some 300 kilometres north of Manila. In among the bones of deer and extinct cattle was one from a hominid foot in two parts. Subsequent diffs have added 12 new pieces to the collection. 7 teeth, 2 finger bones, I don't know what 7 teeth is a handful, 2 toe bones and 1 broken thigh bone. Uranium series dating of the original foot bone indicated an age of at least 67,000 years. One of the teeth was later dated to be at least 50,000 years ago, but it could have been older. Well, that's the tautology, at least, but it could have been. Stone tools have and a dismembered rhinoceros found in 2018 just 40 kilometres southwest of Gallo Cave date from around 700,000 years ago. So this is stone tools, I think, are 2 million years old. So that's and fire. It's pretty amazing. Cats know their name. And there's a very beautiful picture of a cat from Getty Image. That's pretty good. Japanese roots. Cats know their names even if they pretend not to. Japanese research finds popular pets can recognize their names among a bunch of words. I find this is just really difficult to believe. Just anyway. We know that cats indeed are indeed ignoring us when they don't respond to our calls. Japanese researchers have confirmed that feline housemates are quite capable of recognising their names and not just around the house. The team talked to 7 to 8 cats in a home settings and a cat cafe, which are very popular in Japan. It's a cat cafe. There's cat cafes in Sydney. Amazing. And found they were able to distinguish their names from the nouns and even an unfamiliar person was speaking. Cats from the cafe were less able to discriminate their names from those cohabiting cats. But the researchers say this is likely because they frequently hear the names alongside their own, making them associate all the names with the reward and punishment. The research was published in the Journal of Scientific Reports, as led by Asakod Sato of the Department of Cognitive and Behavioural Sciences at the University of Tokyo, and included input from experts in physiology, brain behaviour and childhood education. They acknowledged that they only sampled one cafe and that there are a number of variables in such a group environment, but nevertheless are confident in concluding that cats can discriminate the content of human utterance based on phonetic differences. So we're on to you, Fluffy. So it's just, that's really wacky, so risky, almost unreportable science in my view. Sitting down kills 50,000 Brits each year. I mean, given that you say the average age is 50 million Brits, you've got a fraction of a million Brits dying a year. Say you're about 5%. Yeah, it's not too good. Sedentary lifestyles increase the risk of several serious diseases, modelling reveals. Modelling reveals? Modelling indicates. Nearly 50,000 people in Britain die each year from diseases related to sitting down too much. Well, that's different. That the disease, the desire for the disease, and these diseases are related to it. So it's not that sitting down too long kills. I think it's wrong. That's a key finding of a study led by Leon Hron of Queen's University, Belfast, UK, and published in the Journal of Epidemiology and Community Health. Researchers found that the British National Health Service spends more than $1.3 billion a year on problems stemming from a lazy lifestyle, which the paper defines as sitting or lying down for more than 6 hours of waking time each day. Researchers calculated the cost and mortality of disease such as type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular disease and lung cancer, and adjusted for comorbidity, the occurrence of multiple diseases. When they compared the results to the overall death rate in Britain, the results suggest that 11.6% of all mortality was associated with sedentary behaviour. Now that's a bit more logical. Okay, therefore, 48,024 deaths might have been avoided in 2016 if sedentary behaviour was limited in the UK. That's a statement. You could also say, therefore, 2 deaths, or therefore, 3 deaths. You can't do a non-integer number of deaths there. Okay, I wouldn't definitely do the donut around the black hole, and I find this really interesting. Ingenious research finally reveals the true shape of the Milky Way. I wouldn't quite say that, man. April was quite a month for out-of-this-world photos from space, just days before NASA released the first leaked image of a black hole, see page 35. Astronomers led by Chris Carley, National Radio Astronomy Observatory in Virginia, unveiled a coup of their own. The blue-green oval in the centre of the image are the thick, dusty donuts surrounding the rotating disk of material that itself is falling into the maw of a supermassive black hole that lies in the centre of Cygnus A, a galaxy 760 million light years from us. So our nearest galaxy is 2 million light years. All right. So 760 million is a fair distance. The phenomenon long theorized, but never before directly seen, all black holes, astronomers conclude, are surrounded by a ring of ever-falling material and spewed outflowing disks. This set of features is called an active collective nuclear. So they're actually saying that they're all... However, black holes from different parts of the universe and set at different angles of view terrestrial orbiting telescopes don't look the same. Conditions that lead them to being divided into categories of quasars, blazars, and safe yet galaxies. Well, a quasar is a very just bright, actively lit blazar. What a blazar is, I really don't know. And safe yet galaxies, I have to leave. The AGN model works on assumption that the division represents false taxonomy. To explain this, the notion that the torus was introduced. All black holes powered by a central engine are basically similar except in the matter of mass. The theory runs, but the torus is massive and thick, obscures whatever's behind relative to an observer, altering their appearance. However, Carroll and colleagues have succeeded in directly observing one for the first time. So, that means I've got to get blazes and Cepheid galaxies. Let's see if I'll do that. And I'll just do for reading here. Now, here, this is an interesting article. I just want to blazes, Cepheid things. I've got to see how much I remember when I write this down. Weightlifting mice lose liver fat, improve blood glucose. Short-term strength training shows health gains even without loss. Okay. Even a short period of strength training could improve the long-term health of obese people if results achieved by mouse scale up to human levels. In a paper published by the Journal of Endocrinology, scientists led by Leonardo Penu de Moura at the University of Campinas in Brazil detail the results of short-term workouts given to obese mice. The mice underwent strength training, but over too short a period to lead to weight loss or change of body shape. Nevertheless, it did lead to reduced levels of fat around the liver, reduced inflammatory markers, and improved blood glucose regulations. Quote, the fact that the improvements in the metabolism occurred over a short time, even though the overall amount of body fat was unchanged, suggests that strength training can have a positive effect on health, directly affect the liver function and metabolism, so it may be more effective. So fat of the liver, I think it's telling you that that's the fat of use, if it first started to choose. Non-drug and low-cost strategy for improving health in obesity. So you're still fat, just do a bit of strength training. The outcomes are because obesity is linked to increased risk of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, insulin resistance, type 2 diabetes, but the researchers acknowledge there must be a view be viewed with caution. What? Okay. Previous research indicates that many, perhaps most, results obtained using mice as models fails to replicate in humans. Well, thanks a lot for that. Now, I've got to work out what an astrolabe is. An astrolabe is something where you look at the star and work out where you are compared to. So you look at the star, you put the stars in, and when the stars are different distance from the horizon, you know where you are. An astrolabe recovered from the sunken Portuguese Armada ship was verified twice as the oldest of its type ever discovered. Astrolabes were widely used by astronomers and navigators from the classical period through to the late Middle Ages. As a useful way to calculate the position in relation to the sun and other stars and the horizon. Yeah. That's bizarre. surely just say just inclination. So useful, in fact, that Louise Devoy, curator of the England's Royal Observatory in Greenwich, has described them as the medieval equivalent of the smartphone. I like that. The astrolabe in question was recovered from the wreckage of Esmeralda, discovered in the waters off the coast of Oman in 2016. The instrument known as a solid disk astrolabe represents an intermediate technology with a design that sits between the pan-spheric models that were used during antiquity and the open wheel types that were introduced around 1507. We must know when that ship went down. Its function and provenance were established by a team of comprising of UK salvage expert David Merrins and Jason Roland and Mark Williams from the University of Warwick, who reported their findings in the International Journal of Nautical Archaeology. Using a portable 7-axis Nixian laser scanner, they established beyond doubt that this was a mariner's astrolabe and were able to confidently place it in the correct chronological position and propose it to be an important transitional instrument. That's almost technology porn mentioning that. Just as WHO researchers contracted the Guinness World Records to have verified their findings, Vasco da Gama's astrolabe would duly appear in the publisher's famous annual book. Well, there's a few things sort of left out there which I can't really read. Okay, so we'll just cut it there and I'll see my own brain. 6 minutes of Cosmos Magazine.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.